Radio. Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
Exciting, exciting.
It is. It's exciting. We have the unlimited opportunity for the next 2 hours to say something so incredibly stupid that it will terminate our careers.
No, I don't know. The nominee for Secretary of Defense... had that opportunity, he took it.
He took the opportunity. Well, it did terminate his career, in my opinion.
For those of you that didn't follow that, that was Mr. Hagel was nominated for Secretary of Defense. He's a Republican.
Former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel today demonstrated that he was a complete idiot.
Yes, not very good at what he was supposed to be taught. He was supposed to be very knowledgeable about some things, and he was not.
Well, you know, I mean, he fully supports the president's non-containment policy on... Oh, wait a minute. Wait, maybe we do have... Do we have a containment policy?
It's containment. No, wait a minute. It's prevention. Oh, wait a minute.
What do we have?
Are we talking about Iran or North Korea? We're talking about France now.
One of those places, you know. And your position on Israel is less than supported. You said the United States has tilted too far towards Israel. Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember the exact context, and under the circumstances, I think that probably that the possibility exists.
Well, I believe Iran is a legitimate government, even though the Senate just a few weeks ago voted 97-0 to say that the elections were probably fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a legitimate government.
I really like the one where Senator McCain was asking him questions. Yes, or ask him a yes or no question, and he says, "Well, there's actually several aspects. No, yes or no." I don't remember the context of the. I'm not asking you about the context. I'm asking you.
I don't know what the question was.
What's your position? It was about his position on Israel, that we have tilted too far towards Israel. He didn't recall the context. He only said it about 100 times.
You're right. He said it even recently.
Yeah, and he said, "Do you still hold that position?" Well, I don't remember. There are several aspects to the "I don't remember the context of the." and Senator McCain kept saying,
"The context is important."
It's a really really simple issue. Okay.
Let's give our disclosure here.
Disclosure.
Real quick.
No. Okay. Well, the Personal Wealth Coach is the name of this radio presentation, and it also is the name of an investment advisory firm that manages investment portfolios for people and trusts and things like that,
right,
in Salado, Texas.
It's registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yes, it is. It is registered and with both the state of Texas and the Securities and Exchange Commission. And let's see, what else? Yeah, but But what else is about it?
These two people, bald people on the air talking to you are...
They're both.
Yes, we are managing principals or managing members, advising members, managing principals.
We're principals. We're principals.
Yes.
And we're,
we manage our principals.
We do.
Right.
And we're the firm name and the show name, only we don't call it a show, it's a program. It's not coincidence that they're the same name because it's the same organization. Anyway.
Okay.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're now on the air with the personal wealth coach, and we'll worry about later about figuring out what we are.
Hey, okay. Hey, I hate to call y'all so early and correct you.
Okay.
The question that McCain asked was about the surge.
You're right.
The
Iraqi
surge, and he was...
He said that was the... What was it? The most...
Maybe he said it was the biggest blunder in military history since Vietnam.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Right. That's you are completely correct.
The fact that it worked is irrelevant.
That's right. And the fact that he wouldn't even acknowledge
that it worked.
I was wrong when I said it. I had reasons for saying it, but I was wrong. It worked. You know?
But he wouldn't even acknowledge saying it.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. It worked so well. We used the same strategy in Afghanistan after, you know, Obama elected. So, you know, that just a quick correction. Then
you're completely right, and I really do appreciate it. I was listening to little bits and pieces of it yesterday, and the only thing I remembered is, are they serious that this guy should be the Secretary of Defense?
Well, and that's what concerns me, is it doesn't matter how unintelligent and uninformed he looks, he's going to probably get, elected because everybody's walking lockstep instead of thinking and saying.
I don't know.
I don't think he's
going to be nominated.
I don't know, guys.
He's been nominated. I don't think he'll be approved.
I don't think he's going to be confirmed by the Senate.
I would hope you're correct, but I'd almost put breakfast on this one that he will be confirmed. Unfortunately,
why? Because he's a Republican, and so the Republicans will support him, and he's nominated by the president, so the Democrats will support him.
There are enough Democrats that have said they're not going to support him, and Rubio just said he's not going to support him. So
I think the Democrats will fall in line because it's what Obama wants. He's not Republican in Republican sense. He most of his positions haven't really followed the Republican line, whether he's a Republican or not. I just think he's going to be confirmed, and in most cases you find that, you know, even if there's, unless there's a really, really, really big, how many times have you seen a presidential nominee, even though he wasn't popular, not be confirmed?
Now
the Secretary of Defense is different, but I will also say that normally presidents nominate somebody for defense who have some idea what they're talking about.
Right.
I would agree with you.
And this is an exception to that rule.
I would love to buy you guys breakfast because you're right. I just fear that it wouldn't happen.
No, yeah. we're gonna take you up on that because I like breakfast.
Yeah, Barack Obama was amazingly astute in his first appointment as Secretary of State, Mr. Gates, he happened to be the same Secretary of Defense.
The guy that was in there last time.
He knows what he's doing. Just leave him there. That was great.
And there's some value to that if you think about it. Now then, let's get to the right good question.
Okay.
You guys are a financial show.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, we do.
We claim to be.
We will be the judge of that every Saturday.
Good.
Emerging markets.
They are emerging, yes.
Yes, they are. What's your opinion on emerging markets as an investment going forward? I've been invested in emerging markets the last 2 years, and I'm finally back to break even. Didn't do real well in the last 2 years. What is your opinion in that sector going forward?
All right. I'm going to step in here and begin the answer. This is Jay.
Not really. Excellent. He's sitting. He's right. Not going to step.
My foot moved, though. Yes. My foot did move.
He could say he stood. Who'd know?
Right. He's going to sit in on this.
Okay. Are you seated? That's a good question.
I'm seated.
Okay. All right. Good.
I'm actually parking, so I'm driving.
All right.
Oh.
All right. Okay. We track 22 different asset classes on a regular basis.
Is it 22 or 23?
Well, it depends on if you consider cash.
There's some
others that we track and we don't necessarily use all the time.
Okay, we'll call it 22 or 23.
We can put some more. I mean,
Anyway, we track a lot of
precious metals
classes,
as an
right.
asset class. We track, but it doesn't really fall in our spectrum usually.
Right.
Okay. The most highly performing of those asset classes over a long period of time is emerging markets.
Diversified emerging markets.
That's correct.
The key. Remember to put diversified in the middle.
But it is also
in your time frame.
What?
And I'm looking out 10 years. I'm not looking out.
Okay.
Can I do something this year? Is it something that's?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Because the first 2 years of the 10 weren't stellar. Okay.
Right.
But that's okay. I didn't move out of it.
Good.
I'm home.
Okay, so it is also the most volatile of the asset classes. It moves around so much up and down. Long term, it has performed well. But at any given time, there are points in history where it's gone 5 years and it's been massively.
There are points in history where it's gone 10 years. On
massively the negative. However, and we don't recommend going out there and loading up on emerging markets. Even the person that has the most aggressive portfolio that we recommend, we would not put 100% in emerging markets. And there's some very good reasons for that.
I think the highest we've ever gotten is about 27.
Right. We put some limitations on there because while it is the highest performing asset class, other things happen in your life between now and 10 years from now. I can guarantee to you that something will happen that you don't expect in the next 10 years. It's going to happen.
Not in my life.
Right.
Is your middle name Kreskin?
So knowing this, knowing that we don't know, we tend to be a lot more conservative there. There are people out there who say, oh, okay, my career is in great shape. I've got great savings. I own my house. I have insurance on everything that I can think of. And then their parents move in and they have extra kids that they didn't expect to have. And they lose a job, or you just start going down the list of things that could happen. And they go, I might have to tap that. Now, we do believe our clients when they say we've got at least 10 years. We don't think, okay, you're lying because you don't know whatever is going to happen. But if we didn't allow some degree of leeway in a portfolio, if you're talking 10 years out, which you just said you were, you have to build in some leeway. You have to put in a spare tire in your car because in 10 years, you're probably going to get a flat at some point. I don't have a spare tire in my car, but I have run flat tires, which have failed on me twice. So I think I might just want to put a spare in my trunk.
I'm thinking that, yeah, there you go.
Oh, heck, so, I'm just looking at a car with run flat tires. That's not good.
Yeah. The thing was, I got a flat tire. I'm on a run flat, and I was in a construction zone with barricades up. And that construction zone went for about 10 miles. So I was on my run flat tire, which is designed to run flat for about 40 miles at 40 miles an hour. Well, I wasn't above 40 miles an hour, but I was on a really rough road that was being constructed, and it didn't like it. So that's just building some leeway into a portfolio is the same as insurance. You want to make sure that while recognizing emerging markets has a great potential. And we have emerging markets in almost every portfolio that we design, diversified emerging markets. And it's just a question of how much is in there.
The thing about emerging markets is, this is my general recommendation. As Jake said, over a very long period of time, it has performed as one would expect of something that has the highest total gain over the last 35 years. And it also has the highest variance over the last 35 years. And it, by itself, diversified emerging markets is out there at the point where there's no way. And frankly, if I had a choice, you know, the issue of somebody say, I've only got diversified emerging markets in a portfolio, I would say, run, don't walk away from that position. Because, frankly, even though it has the highest return, the variance goes up dramatically there to the point where it's really silly to have that in a portfolio unless, and here we go, here's the key, unless you have assets classes in there that historically have run the other way.
Well, here's what we'll do. We'll use a lot of big fancy words all of a sudden. We're going to say You can balance out the standard deviation of your portfolio by applying asset classes with negative correlation to your strongest asset class. And did you hear?
If you understood what he just said, you're above me. Anyway,
did he say I should invest in something that that loses money when something's gaining money? Is that what he just said?
That's sort of
what it sounds like.
Yeah,
as long as your long-term portfolio or the long-term return, historic long-term return.
The point is that when people dump money into emerging markets, they have a tendency to be taking money out of something else pretty consistently and vice versa. And when they take money out of emerging markets, it has a tendency to go someplace else pretty consistently, because over a long period of time, the mass of investors do some pretty predictable, silly things.
Yep.
Like, you know, they've been dumping for the last year.
Like buying it high and selling it low?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but people have been dumping money into bonds over the last year, and there's a great discussion in Barron's in their roundtable this week where basically Bill Gross, who is the bond maven of the universe, points out that the average investor does not have a clue that rising interest rates equal falling bonds.
Yeah.
And as a result, for the last year, they have been turning a fire hose into the bond. And even he, who has, I've never, ever before heard him say a negative word about bonds. He manages the largest bond portfolio in the United States.
And the world.
And he was saying that bonds are scary right now.
Yeah, this is a great thing. You mentioned this. 2 years it's been since for you to break even in emerging markets.
That's short.
Okay. So 2 years, emerging markets have been struggling. Well, what's an asset class that's been doing well for the last 2 years that we're talking about being dangerous right now? Bonds.
And by the way, they tend to run in exactly the opposite direction for emerging markets.
Right. So a lot of times we'll have a balance in a portfolio of different types of bonds against the emerging markets. Because if you think, if bonds are high right now, we should be selling them. Well, where do you put the money? Well, emerging markets are low right now. So that's what negative correlation really means. Over a really long period of time, historically, bonds have done well. But over a really long period of time, emerging markets have done well.
I want to emphasize diversified emerging markets. I strongly recommend that unless you have enough money you're willing to lose it, that you not focus on any one emerging markets or even a group of emerging markets.
Right.
And the other thing I want to say,
people like to say BRIC, or, you know, there's all kinds of fancy, we're just going to be in one area. Don't do that.
The other thing I want to say about emerging markets is that it is the least efficient asset class we have, meaning the different, you can't, an emerging markets index is far more likely to be beat by a good emerging markets manager than in any other asset class. On the other hand, emerging market index is more likely to be underperformed dramatically by any given manager. In other words, there's a great spread of managerial results in the diversified emerging markets asset class. Now, once you get into large cap value,
that was a really complicated statement.
Or
you just
bonds.
Made.
You get a very, very narrow spread where the best manager and the worst manager, there's just not a whole lot of difference between them.
Here's an example.
And the index fund may be the place to go. But in diversified emerging markets, the difference between the best and the worst managers is earth-shaking.
Yeah. Here's an example of what, just to make this really clear, a money market fund is an example of a really, really efficient asset class where a manager, even the best manager, is not likely to get a lot more than the worst manager because they have some very stringent rules on what they're allowed to invest in. You get into areas that's the most efficient. You get into emerging markets, diversified emerging markets, and first off, there are so many places to choose from that it's really hard for the average to apply to everybody. Second, in all the places that you have to choose, each of those places have lots of things to choose from. So we get into an area where the spectrum is just so wide that a really, really good manager can choose the wrong country on a given day and then the wrong company in the wrong country.
To give you some idea,
That's why we diversify.
This is kind of revealing. Morningstar has metal ratings.
Yeah.
On different categories. Are you familiar with that?
They've got star ratings and then metal ratings.
I've heard of star ratings.
They've got gold, silver, bronze, and nada.
Okay.
Okay. And
they're kind of like the Olympics, is what you're saying.
Well, the point is,
I want to see Morningstar figure skate. That would be great.
They do.
Go ahead.
The typical asset class has, oh, 5 or 6 golds in it, probably 10 or maybe 10 silvers, and maybe 15 bronze funds in it, okay? And diversified emerging markets has one, count them, one gold-rated fund. One, exactly. And, you know, there's lots of funds out there, but only one of them has got a gold rating from Morningstar. And there's a couple of silver-rated ones. It's a matter of, it's even hard for them to figure out which managers to choose. And I was looking at a 401k portfolio the other day that we're managing, and the only diversified emerging market, the only thing that's even vaguely in that area in this portfolio, and I don't know who puts 401k portfolios together, but I've got a feeling they were smoking something illegal on many occasions. But the only choice they had was Eastern Europe diversified emerging markets. Only East, I mean, if you want to get outside the United States in something smaller than Behemoth, you have to use Eastern Europe. I do not understand the logic behind that, but for somebody who's in that particular 401k, it's kind of a coin toss to figure out whether we won't even use emerging markets in that one, because not because Eastern Europe hasn't done well. It's done phenomenally well, which is probably why it's in there. It's just that you've narrowed it down to the point where Eastern Europe is an interesting position. I mean, you know, if you just look at it and you look at the numbers and you do all your typical security stuff, it really looks good until you realize that there's something sitting right next to Eastern Europe. Do you know what it is?
An ocean.
No.
Oh,
no,
a mountain.
No.
A mountain.
No.
A tree. Churches.
Do you know what Eastern Europe is defined as, by the way? The old Warsaw Pact minus the Soviet Union. Okay? What is right next door to all of those ex-Soviet Union satellites? The old Soviet Union, right? Russia?
Right.
And, of course, they're so stable and non-aggressive and easy to get along with that they would never dream of, like, cutting off everybody's natural gas in the middle of the winter, would they?
Oh, that's never wait a minute. That's happened a few times. Wait a minute.
So this is one of those little risk factors that drops in there that it's called non-systemic risk, and we don't like non-systemic risk. And what it means is if Putin wakes up in a bad mood one morning, that entire mutual fund could tank. So that's just one of those little things to figure. Diversified emerging markets is a very, very complex area to try to analyze. And you can't, it's very dangerous to do any. You asked me to do a generalization at the beginning, and I'm telling you, it's very hard to do a generalization. Among other things, I'll tell you one other thing that we didn't mention.
Among other things, there's another thing.
There is one thing I want to close this out with.
Lots of things and these other things.
And this is true of any asset class. If you look at an asset class, and I don't care if it's large cap growth or bonds or whatever, I think it's very, very important to look at the mean return, total return in that asset class, and you need to pull inflation out to see the mean real total return over a long period of time, and you'll get a nice little straight line.
Ooh.
Well, that's if you do it on a logarithmic scale. In other words, you get a line that says, okay, over a long period of time, this, the average of the annual returns, not the compound return, but the average of the annual returns in this asset class has been, whatever, okay?
Boy, are we nerds. Go ahead.
But the point is, you wind up with this neat little line, and then you look at the fact that the last several years, that particular asset class has gone way the heck above its mean.
We say, whoa, that's probably not the one we need to be in right now.
No matter how good it looks, it's probably a good idea to be somewhere else. Once it gets more than 20% above its mean, the probabilities of reversion to the mean start rearing its ugly head, and that means
or its pretty head.
Reversion to the mean is a powerful force, and if you are well below the long-term mean, which is where the general stock market is in the United States right now, then you can say with some degree of confidence that there's a high probability over the next 10 years the stock market will dramatically have returns that are dramatically higher than its long-term average or mean. If you're in an asset class where the last 5 years, let's just say, or 10 years, it has been well above its long-term mean, you can say with a reasonable degree of confidence, get ready for bad times, folks, because they's coming. You know, it's like rain. If you've had floods and tremendous quantities of rain, and you may remember if you've been in Central Texas any length of time when the reservoirs around here were running over their spillways. Do you remember that?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
What followed?
Waterfalls.
What followed that?
Oh, drought.
Drought. Okay, so we've had a drought for a long time. What's coming?
You would think.
Floods.
Floods. You think there might be some more floods?
Yep, we're going to get them. Write it down.
In that case, we sell root feeders. Maybe we'll sell more root feeders.
I don't know what. I just know that the rains, they are coming because it comes in these long, and we tend to revert to the mean. And it's true of virtually everything where you get large-scale cyclical behavior.
Yeah, it's funny because...
And people in particular.
It's funny because for a long time, farmers and the almanac for farmers would just write this up and say, for some reason, over this period of time, we get drought, and then we have rains for this period of time. We don't know why. We're just going to say it happens. Well, now we know that we've named little boys and little girls in the Pacific El Nino and La Nina, and we've got these warm currents that alternate back and forth, and now, the meteorologists are saying, well, this is why it happens, but we still don't know why it happens.
It's darned butterfly.
Yes, he's waving its wings again in some forest somewhere,
right,
making hurricanes. Just stop that butterfly.
We can find that butterfly.
Well, I'm going to find that butterfly. I'm going to hire geckos all over the world to search for that butterfly.
They'll probably cause earthquakes.
Shameful.
Don't go down that way. You're from Toledo and you start finding salamanders that nobody's seen before, and you spend billions of dollars trying to...
Well, did you hear the good news about Toledo, the Toledo salamander? It's going to...
They can't find him?
Well, no. The good news is they looked at the economic impact of declaring it an endangered species and came to the conclusion that it's very low economic impact, and almost all of the economic impact will be borne by the federal government.
Oh, isn't that nice? My taxes will pay for it. Lovely.
Well, no, it's just basically they've already plugged this in, by the way, as they expand I-35 through the middle of the habitat, they've got to do a bunch of environmental controls as they go through to keep from screwing up the creek and dumping lots of mud and concrete and stuff into the creek, which they were going to do anyway. So, now Belton,
No problem.
They're going to have big bucks.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Walmart here, or my wife's going to shoot me.
Wife is going to shoot you?
None of that.
If I don't get to Walmart, she is.
All right.
Okay, call 119.
All right, bye.
What is the telephone number for 911? Anyway?
I don't know. I'll have to look that up. Okay. We don't have a phone book anymore.
How are you supposed to find this stuff? How are you supposed to figure this stuff out?
It's difficult.
Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to ask questions or make comments or engage in stimulating conversation about butterflies and geckos and investing, you're welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
But for the next about 3 minutes, you're going to hear commercials instead. So
it's horrible.
If it takes you that long to dial the phone, which it typically does for me,
dial.
I won't even go there. Okay, yeah. Commercial time. We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. With the sound of the St. Andrews. Is it St. Andrews?
Thomas.
St. Thomas dancing
cats.
Squalling cats.
On snare drums.
On snare drums, yeah.
Yes.
You know, some people get high on drugs, they get high on snare drums.
Yes.
Which cats, you know, I mean, if they get up on a snare drum, they're definitely high, right?
By definition.
Right, exactly.
Or higher than they were.
Well, obviously, then, you know.
Unless the snare drum is in a hole.
Well, and they could get higher on trees.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 773-1400 is the number to call if you want to consult with a couple of guys who may or may not know what they're talking about when it comes to investing. Otherwise?
1-866-597-1400. And you're going to tell us the secrets behind why gold went up.
Yes, I understand.
He's
by
been
the way,
saying na-na-na-na-na to me all break and won't even tell me why he's saying na-na-na-na-na, just that he knows something.
Na-na-na-na.
That's how we communicate.
By the way, although the Scott Luther Show does advertise on this show, we have nothing to do with that.
No, we do not.
No, we have less than nothing to do with that. I read an article.
Uh-oh.
That's
where your problem is. It's literacy. If you could just stop that, you'd be in great shape.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
So you read an article, and now you know things.
It's something called Seeking Alpha, which you have to... To get to the articles, you have to do some weird things and sign up and all kinds of things. But the point is, there is an economist in there who examines the rise in the price of gold. And initially, he was looking. Well, first off, one of the things that came up last year when gold continued to rise last year. By the way, let me back up a step.
This is the second buy.
Gold peaked in September and has been coming down since.
Right.
Gold dropped in 2009 at the height of the financial crisis. That both of those are behaviors, for lack of a better term, in the price of gold that don't make any sense when we look at the historic movements of gold. Typically, the 2009 crisis, we would have expected it to cause a dramatic increase in the price of gold because we had a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear. Typically, that has run the price of gold up. And somebody asked me yesterday, is gold a good investment at this point? And I said, man, I really wish I could answer the question. But the bottom line to it is gold is way the heck above its intrinsic value, but it keeps being above its intrinsic value, and I don't know why. So then last night I was reading this article, and the guy has got it, in my opinion, nailed down.
I thought I heard angels singing last
Something
night.
Like
I guess
that.
That's
here,
what
here,
happened.
Here's
huh?
what happened. We talked about emerging markets a little earlier. China is an emerging market. I know a lot of people don't think, well, how could the second largest economy in the world be an emerging market?
Because it's
big. Because it's huge. And its per capita GDP is lower than Mexico. So it's got a long ways to go.
Yeah. Just to let people know, The line that we use to determine when an economy is an emerging market versus an emerged market, we tend to use South Korea's per capita GDP. That means if you averaged the amount of money made in the whole economy by the number of people in the economy, that's a per capita GDP, and that we use South Korea. So China is way below that.
One of the things about an emerging market like China is that when you have huge inflows of capital into a market like China, and you have tremendous export activity, which causes more money coming into China, China has digested, if you will, phenomenal quantities of money relative to the size of the economy. China also does not allow its currency to leave the country. In other words, it works both ways. One, if you want to buy something in China, you use their currency. You can't use dollars. However, when China buys something from outside of China, and they are net importers right now, particularly they're heavily importing raw material and energy, oil and things. They are huge importers, not exporters of these things. And they have to use dollars to buy them because they will not allow their currency to go into free exchange. The government of China, the Central Bank of China, actually controls the yuan or renminbi,
The denominations are different.
But it's the same thing. It's just whoever, what you want to call it. The Chinese currency if it were in any other developing country with the quantity of capital that's poured into that country, would have inflated phenomenally. And the question is, why hasn't it? Why, as a matter of fact, they had some very, very large inflation going on in China back in the 1990s. And then all of a sudden, the Chinese inflation drops dramatically, and it goes down, and they lock the Chinese currency to the dollar. In other words, as the dollar goes up, the Chinese currency goes up. As the dollar goes down, the Chinese currency goes down. They right. locked it to the dollar. A lot of countries have tried that and basically blown up their economies because it just doesn't work well. So why did it work so well in China? Somewhere you have to have something else being inflated with all of that money that's pouring into China. And what this guy points out is what's being inflated is gold. What China does with the excess money that pours into its economy is it buys gold. And it has gotten, India used to be the number one gold importer. China has knocked them completely off the block. And nobody really knew. People were making assumptions that there was a lot of gold hoarding going on in China. You know, we don't get a lot of, by the way, internal economic data coming out of China. If you have it, from their perspective, you're guilty of a felony. You know, we have the Commerce Department publishing all kinds of information. That kind of information in China is highly classified. They don't want you to know what's going on in their economy. But what has happened, apparently, the Chinese are not only buying treasuries, because the guy took a look at the fact that they buy U.S. treasuries, they buy a lot of U.S. treasuries. However, they can't buy enough U.S. treasuries. By the way, that's one of the reasons treasuries are so high, is the fact that the Chinese have been buying them. But we limit how much we allow them to buy, so they can't manipulate our economy. So where'd the rest of the money go? And people have been talking about, well, what happens when the Chinese start buying something besides dollars and treasuries? Well, they have been.
Yes, they have been quite a while.
They have been buying gold. And the reason this guy pointed out that gold peaked in September and has leveled off is if you go back and check, that's when the Chinese economy started to slow down, not go backwards, not go into recession, but the growth rate of the economy leveled off lower than it has historically been, and the inflows of money into China started reducing, and the price of gold leveled off and started falling. And he makes some very, very good points, because if you track the gold going into China, a tremendous amount of gold is going into China. They've done a very, very good job. The government of China has done a very, very good job of buying through a whole host of dealers so that it isn't really obvious what they're doing. But his point is, China has been loading up on gold for a long time, not, by the way, as an investment asset. This is an important issue. Not as an investment asset, but as a means of controlling a money sink, exactly, of controlling inflation. They don't care if they make any money on it or not.
I would like to have a money sink.
They just don't want to have runaway inflation in their economy.
All of my sinks are not money sinks. They are for water and plumbing, and you know, I've got a disposal unit in my. I need a money sink.
No,
I really need.
You got a money couch.
I have a money couch.
Yeah, everybody's got a money couch. Pull the seats out, and there's money down.
Oh yeah,
it grows.
They have a money sink, and they make all their sinks out of gold,
right?
Which I would think would be tough because it's a soft metal.
But here's the he pointed out that in 2009, in the middle of the crisis, when the price of gold, we would have thought if it was a fear-based purchase, the price of gold should have gone up. Instead, it went down. Why did it go down? Because China, all of a sudden, had no buyers for their exports. But they did not go through a recession. They're the only major nation on the planet that did not go through a recession in the 2009 event, whatever you want to call it, the Great Recession.
2008, 2009.
And yet they didn't sell off treasuries. So where did they get the money? Because what they did during this period, by the way, is they built lots of stuff that nobody lives in.
Yes, they spent a lot of money in surplus. But
where did they get, where'd the money come from?
And this is a big, big deal.
And they were selling gold.
Right. When this is something since we're on the subject of money and where it goes, people have a lot of trouble when we talk about our debt. We talk about this on the program. We talk about the United States government debt. And we say the numbers that are up there aren't really the numbers that are real numbers. And people go, then why are they posting them? You guys are weird talking about how the numbers that are posted are wrong and just take your word for it. Okay. For the same reason that China was taking this extra money and socking it into gold, because where else would they put it? Where would they put the money, the extra money that's coming into their system?
In vaults.
In vaults. But what is the denomination? It would have to be converted into
really,
yuan.
Really big vaults, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've taken some of that money and they purchased long-term U.S. government treasuries, and they've taken out some of that money and they bought gold with it, because what else do you do with it? Governments really have trouble in putting money in a bank account because the money's only as good as the government. So they have to hold it in something else. And it's kind of easy for other governments to do it. China and Great Britain, and you go down the list of all the other governments out there, Germany. What do they do if they have too much money? If they're running a surplus, they didn't spend all the money, what do they do with it?
They really haven't had a lot to worry about in that
right.
area recently.
Not lately, but when they do, they say, all right, we're going to buy gold and we're going to buy U.S. government treasuries. Well, the U.S. government has a little problem in that when it has extra money, and I know people are saying, well, the government doesn't have extra money. We haven't had extra money since the year 2000.
Actually, in the 1980s, we had a lot of extra money.
And actually, and I'll say this carefully, we have a little extra money right now.
Yes.
And people go, wait a minute, we're running a deficit. How is that possible? Well, because of accounting. We have a tax that we've charged for Social Security and Medicare. And we charge that, and we've been collecting, except for the last 2 years, we're back to a surplus position, but the last 2 years we had a negative position. Since the beginning of Social Security, we've been collecting more than we've been paying out. Well, what do we do with that money? Al Gore was famous for saying, we need to have a lock box to put that money, put it somewhere so that something can be done with it. He never said what. What does the U.S. government do? We don't want it investing in our corporations. If you do, just look how well our investment in General Motors has done so far, and you'll see that this is not a way. The government shouldn't be making decisions on. We don't want them owning the whole economy. Then we have communism in disguised as capitalism. Okay, so what does it do with its
money?
Now
we're talking about Red China again.
Right, right. So what does it do with its money? Even China knows that you don't buy your own companies because that leads to bad capitalism. Well, what the government has done with this extra money is it's written an IOU to itself. In essence, it's bought itself U.S. government treasuries. It's writing a loan to itself, which is what a U.S. government treasury is. It's doing the same thing that China's doing and that Germany's doing, and that any other country that has too much money does, is they buy U.S. government treasuries. So when we say that the national debt of the United States isn't that actual number, if you write yourself a loan, you say, I'm going to pay myself back $20. What happens if you don't write it, if you don't pay yourself back?
Nothing.
That's the same thing that happens if the United States government decides not to pay back its debt to itself for Social Security. It's not all owed at one point anyway. It's a special kind of treasury bond. It's only owed as interest. Interest rates are really low. And if it decided, I don't want to pay interest to myself, shame on me, nobody's going to stop it. And there's no real consequences to it anyway. So that comes back to why gold is expensive and all of this good
stuff.
And
we got a break for
More commercials.
But that's what I wanted to point out is I feel very good about the fact that I have now some understanding as to why the price. The other thing that's – I want to add one item on that, okay?
We got commercials.
I want to do the commercials, but I want to add that one item. People who are buying gold for security are in essence saying, I'm going to invest my money in a place – that the Chinese government uses to manipulate currency.
Right. It's like
that's really safe.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to bet against De Beers in the diamond market. probably not the best idea in the world.
Yeah, well, so the bottom line is when China needs to start liquidating, which who knows when that'll happen.
It'll happen, though. It's already happened once.
Then the price of gold will definitely tank. Anyway, we won't know until it happens, but we got to do commercials. We'll be back in about 3 minutes with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with another about 4 minutes of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Of course, and we got another hour after that. But if you'll note down the telephone numbers, you're certainly welcome to give us a call, particularly next hour, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I was really impressed when I finally figured out. I hate it when I see macroeconomic conundrums. You know, when the price of something like gold goes up as much as it has gone up, and I can't figure out why. It's kind of like years ago, there was a stock. I haven't owned stocks since the late 1990s because we tell people not to own stocks, and I was a stockbroker at the time, and once we got away from stocks, I don't own any stocks anymore. But I owned a stock back in the 1990s, and that thing kept going up and kept going up and kept going up. I could not figure for the life of me why that stock kept rising. I even, its subsidiary in the United States, its CEO, stated publicly he had no idea why it was rising. I'm not sure that's true, but he made the statement. I sold the stock. Last stock I owned, I did pretty well. It kept going up. I sold out at 48. It topped at 62. It's now $4. Figured out finally last year or why that stock had been going up. There's a big trust in the Netherlands
that was buying it
that owns the majority of the company.
Uh-huh.
And it was buying the stock.
Well, that was nice of it.
And it kept pushing the price up, buying the stock to keep the price up, to keep the value of the trust up.
Well, as a piece of news, I know we've got some big news that came out this week. And
we
only have a minute or so. We'll be talking about the GDP, and we'll be talking about other things that have happened in the economy in the past week. Next hour.
Yes, Lord willing.
We've got lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
got
the
some
market
great...
did something unusual last week.
Yeah, one or two things happened. The GDP numbers were weird.
Then there's the ADP numbers.
ADP numbers were weird.
And the GDP versus the ADP versus the labor DOL.
Car sales numbers were weird. I mean, you just go down a list of very strange things that have been happening, and most of which we predicted.
I've tried sailing cars. It doesn't work.
I've been wrapping my arm in a sling for most of the week because I wrenched my shoulder out of socket, patting myself on the back on all of our appropriately made and timed predictions and that they're coming true. It's like, I don't know if it's worth patting myself on the back anymore if I'm wrenching my shoulders out.
But we will be talking about the what's going on in the market, which we forecast that. And why the GDP was negative and I think it's fascinating what happened with the jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That jobs report was right. Every Republican should be jumping and clapping their hands.
Yes. So if you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting.
Why would they want to do that?
I don't know. I don't call our voicemail very often.
Okay.
But locally, it's 947-1111. Or you can reach us toll-free at 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. We get a lot of good feedback on what we should talk about next week through these sources. So if you are interested in letting us know what you think.
And the reason, by the way, it's 947-1111 so I could remember it.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting it, too.
Yeah, it's just...
So until next hour,
this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.